Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I think at this point this is probably my favourite Spy franchise because it is consistent in a way that none others really are. It's like there's a continuity to it, but up until maybe the very recent ones, you don't need to know anything. So I think it's very accessible.
If you want your Cold War Brian De Palma thriller, you've got one there. Mm-hmm. If you want some John Woo nonsense, you've got two. If you want something that's fast-paced but emotionally driven, you've got three.
Everyone looks like they're having a great time. It's just great to see fun things every now and again.
And then the fact that the guy who has essentially taken over it now is delivering the big bucks anyway, the big thrills, is like no mean thing.
Hello, film fans. In our remote recording studio today, we have Daryl.
Hello.
Matt.
Hello.
And as always, Kobe.
Hello.
And we're here to talk about Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol.
Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher.
Hello everyone, welcome to Flix Watcher Podcast. Joining us remotely today we have Daryl and Matt. If you could please say hello and tell the listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Hello everyone, my name is Matt Brothers and I am spread across three podcasts. Spotlight, the Star Trek podcast, looking at the franchise from a non-Trekkie perspective. Sun Double Deep, the triple bill title word film podcast. And our newest venture is Paul Dano OK, a filmography podcast looking at the actor Paul Franklin Dano to see if he really does get the shit kicked out of him in every film he chooses to be in.
Have you had contact from his people? Have they served you with cease and desist?
Or I mean, hopefully not. Yeah, I'm gonna try and reach out at a certain point when we're a bit further along the line, because you know, we're pretty sure we're the only podcast focused on Paul Dano in existence. So, you know, that's contractually obliged to come and talk to us. Really, we need to know: are you okay? So we'll get the answer one day.
Daryl, who are you?
Who am I? Yeah, I'm Daryl. I'm co-host on Is Paul Dano Okay? See what I did there. And also, I'm one part of the trio, part of the trident, tripod and the triptych of Sudden Double Deep, the triple bill title podcast. And yeah, on that show, we watched three films linked by a word in the title. And so yeah, that's me. That's me, guys.
Well, let's talk about your wanting obviously going to Is Paul Dano Okay? Dano Okay? But let's talk Sudden Double D. That's another one you guys do together. How's that? Helen and I have been on an episode for...
You did.
Only? Or was it strongly?
It was your pick. Your only triple bill.
Yeah, the only triple bill.
I was only The Brave just came back onto Amazon Prime the other day, and I was just reminded at how much of a downer that ending was. And thank you for that, Kobe. Good grief.
I think is that Your Eyes for Your Eyes Only, or You Only Live Twice.
Two Bonds.
I know. I love the fact that we just did neither. That's just such a baller move. But that was so much fun having you guys on for that, because that was such an interesting pick of films. We had the wonderful Mark Dacascos Capoeira film.
Only the Strong.
Yeah, I was just shaking her head. I love this. This is great podcasting.
Such a weird film.
What was the third Only film? We do this all the time. Like,
is it Only Yesterday?
Only Yesterday.
Yes.
Oh, that was the Ghibli one. Yeah.
We've still not done another since.
Is that the first Ghibli?
No, our first Ghibli.
Yeah.
I'd say our first Ghibli. That was pre-you becoming a full-timer on
the
show.
So what, the first Ghibli on the pod?
That we've covered, and yeah.
Has there been one since?
No, this is my point. Like, we should do more.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Contrive a Ghibli.
Need to. Somehow.
Well, there is a podcast, the Ghibliotech, and we were on the same WhatsApp group, so maybe you can engineer a, guys, we need to do a Ghibli podcast. Can you pick a three-way film that starts with Ponyo or something like that?
we've been pretty bad on the whole guest thing for Sun Double Deep this year. We've got a couple lined up, but yeah, I think that's comes season five. We'll need to hit the ground running. Or six? I don't know what we're going to be on.
I think it's like year five, season six. It's something. The way it works.
I don't know, Matthew. It's been too long. But yeah, that's been since 2016. So from July 2016. And yeah, it's been a ride. And now with Is Paul Dano Okay? We kind of started earlier this year. And it's seasonal as well, which is a whole different kettle of fish from going on from, like, you know, the weekly thing with Sun Double Deep to... You know, we have this wonderful period where we recorded everything, got everything done, scheduled it all, and then there's like a 2-month break.
So we had the joy of having, like, now we can have a 2-month break of just not worrying about it. And then as soon as I got things up and running for season two, of course we record half the season in about 3 days. And then it's like, oh, we can have another month break now, actually. We can take our foot off the gas a bit. So, yeah, it's always good to be prepared.
So, I mean, is Paul Dano okay? Generally, that's a question... One of the films we've reviewed here is Prisoners, and he is
not okay.
Not okay in that film.
This is the fun thing, tracking kind of the injuries, both physical and emotional turmoil he goes through. I'm kind of collating everything in a letterbox list over there, where I'm just trying to kind of rank the films based on the amount of punishment he's in so far. Funnily enough, out of all season one, I think there's only been one film where he ends up dead. And that is, well, I won't say what it is, a bit of a spoiler, but it is one you've seen. And then there are other ones, like Taking Woodstock. So Ang Lee Oddity, 2009's Taking Woodstock, he essentially cameos as a guy chilling in a camper van with his girlfriend getting high. And he's very okay. And that, I don't think you can beat that, to be honest. So it's not all doom and gloom.
One of the things from... I think for me, it's impossible to hear that without hearing the glorious theme song.
Yes, Daryl.
It's a good earworm, isn't it? It just sticks with you, that one.
Where did the idea for that come from?
And you realise you're singing it around the house and, like...
Yes,
good. Singing it at work, you know, and just singing it and...
It's literally Blondie. that's all it is, but just with different lyrics.
We've
over
got
the top.
A lot of cease and desist letters.
Yeah, I was going to say Debbie Harry.
That will totally be it. But yeah, and then like the lyrics are a wonderful back and forth between Matt and myself. And then Matt lent me his ukulele, and I'd never played a ukulele before. But I was like, I need to learn this because. Yeah. Then something very silly happened. Is I created another little interlude for the first episode, thinking I was just going to use that one interlude for every single episode. But then I created a second one as a bit of a joke. And then Matt and Jeanette, wife and Sun Double Deep co-host, was like, "Oh, so you're doing one for every episode then?" And I was like, "Oh no!" and that's me now having to plan the next 8 for season 2.
Well, that's half the fun now. Like thinking what song can we rework to match the film we're talking about?
Yeah, some of that season one they don't really match up, but those that do, there are some zingers there. It's great. It's lots of fun.
I don't understand that the image is going to change every season as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so we got the wonderful Stephen Trumbull, previous guest on, I think, all of our shows, most likely.
Yeah, we've had yep. David.
You've had David?
You've had Dave.
You've not had the pleasure.
Ooh.
We'll get Steve on.
Steve is a fantastic artist as well as comedian and podcaster himself. And so, yeah, he designed the Spotlight logo first for me, Liam and Paul back in the day. And so we knew we wanted him to tackle this. And, yeah, we had the idea of... kind of refreshing the main logo image every season to reflect a character Paul Dano plays from a film featured in that season. So season one is Okja Dano, looking a bit beaten up in his white shirt. And season two is going to be Swiss Army Man Dano, bearded and haggard and in peril. And then we'll mix it up for seasons 3 and 4 and onwards and things. So we're trying to work out, you know, what's the iconic Paul Dano character image from each season that we can rough up.
Which is such a hilarious kind of concept when you think about it. The most iconic Dano, when he is, as actors go, even as a character actor, he's somebody who I would say is most notable for the fact that he's not all that notable. He's a great actor that supports other actors within whatever he's in. He's not, you know, when you're watching, you know, a lot of films that he's in, he's not the main draw, certainly, and he's certainly not the main, like, the main focus really for most things. Even things like being Flynn is really it's kind of considered a Robert De Niro vehicle.
But he's got the kind of enviable task of not leading the film, so the weight isn't on him. But he gets the opportunity with the... he's got the stellar performances, he's got the standout performances in films.
He gets to pick his projects, his directors, and he knows people want him, and he can give him what he wants. But tragically, never Academy Award nominated for anything yet.
Because he doesn't act... He's not a big performance in anything. Yeah. Well, seeing the Riddler might change that.
I think Little Miss Sunshine was probably would have been the closest, but there's so many people who got nominated
acting the chops
big
off.
Ensemble film.
It felt like something like Love and Mercy, his Beach Boys biopic, would have been one of them. But even that was shared with John Cusack playing the older version of the same character. So, you know, even that was kind of his big lead. It's a biopic, he's playing a real person. Period, music film, ticks all the boxes. But I don't quite know what that picked up awards are yet, but certainly not anything too big, which is a real shame, because it felt like that was the one. If you kind of Google interviews with him, the last time he was sort of invited on talk shows and things, you know, he's been on Kimmel and Fallon and all that. I think it was for the Love and Mercy sort of tour that he was last kind of talking, but then he went a bit quiet anyway, because he last appeared in the film in Okja, and then since then he directed Wildlife and has been on TV in something called Escape at Dunamora. And now the Batman got pushed back to next year as well. So it feels like there's been a big gap, like there's a big Dano gap that we're filling now until he makes his return.
Well, we're here to talk about other films. We're talking about Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, which is your choice, Daryl. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us why you chose it? And then I'll get the countdown up and you've got to give us a synopsis in less than 60
seconds.
Light the fuse,
Kobe.
So I chose this because it's my favorite of the Mission Impossible films. I dig it. Jeanette and I actually, we weren't going to do a full run through of the franchise. I picked them all up in 4K a couple months back. And so we did Ghost Protocol, Rogue Nation, and Fallout, because I was like, they're the most recent ones. Let's do them. And I hadn't seen Fallout since the cinema, so that was shocking. And you know, nice telly, nice speakers. Thought, let's do this. And then the opportunity came to be on this with you guys. I was going through my Netflix list and suddenly saw Ghost Protocol, which I'd literally only seen the week before, and was like, I could literally watch this again right now. I dig it. I do.
So, synopsis. Go.
So, his organization disavowed him. With an untested team foisted upon him, IMF agent Ethan Hunt has to stop an extremist from starting a nuclear war.
Very good.
Isn't that always the synopsis?
No, we were saying this actually. This is the first one where it's been like anything like nuclear.
The last one, Fallout, was nuclear, wasn't it? Fallout was some
But again, this came out. That was the sixth film. This is the fourth. Sure. But you know, prior to this, you know, the first film, it's a list of agents and their real names. The second film, it's a biological weapon. The third film, it's a different biological weapon. And this one, it's the threat of nuclear holocaust. Yes.
I mean, the first thing I've got to say is I like the series, but I can never, if someone said Ghost Protocol, I'd have to think long and hard about which one it is. And someone would have to say, it's the Burj Khalifa one. I'm like, yes, okay, I know where you are. Fallout, which one's that? Broken Leg, fine. Okay, I know where. That's how. And also randomly, the Brad Bird one. I think the directors somehow I can hook in with them more than the actual name of the of the film.
John Woo one, Slow Mo and Pigeons, number two.
John I think that's the
Metallica, number two.
Yeah, Metallica and Limp Bizkit. Oh. All up in your
face. I mean, it's
face.
The best one, isn't it, really?
I mean
God. Is it, though? Look, it's something that I was actually speaking to a guy on Twitter, Danimal Control, a couple of weeks ago, because Matt and I, we did one and two back-to-back a few weeks ago.
Yep.
Last weekend, actually?
Yeah, and we worked out that's a really these break down into good double bills. Like, one and two are so different, but they're of a very much of an era, and you can do them as a double. And then we literally did three and four today before this recording, and that's kind of the like a sort of the change in helmsmanship, with JJ sort of writing the ship and taking things on,
and then producing from the
And then obviously Rogue Nation and Fallout are the Macquarie, so they kind of go well together. Mm. But yeah, this has been a great few days mainlining these first four again, because I hadn't seen them in quite a while, and I love them so much.
You thought you had to recap before you got to this one?
We just kind of felt like it, really, didn't we?
Yeah,
yeah. It was on Sky. I mean, it was on Sky. My wife and I were going through them recently because I hadn't rewatched them. I think maybe watched them all once, and that's literally some Mission Impossible, the first one, however many 20 years ago when that first came out. Mm. So I literally hadn't seen it since then. And they all came out on Sky, and I was like, yeah, actually, I'll do that. And it's really the first two are just a bit. First three are just a bit like, yeah. I mean, I can see why it's a thing, because Tom Cruise is, and he's, you know, kind of fine. But then it is really it's this one where it takes a step up. It's almost like Fast and Furious, where the first three are a bit like, this is a bit of an okay-ish thing, and then is it Fast Five? But it takes an uptick, and you're like, hold on, this is now interesting.
The first three are most definitely a franchise trying to find its feet, and kind of desperately as well. That first one was most certainly just like. I mean, the whole idea of getting Brian De Palma on to do an espionage film based on a 1960s and then 80s TV property seemed like, with Tom Cruise, you know, at the, you know, like, you know, 90s Cruise-ness in there, was an amazing thing. But then by the time we hit like that weird gulf in 2000 with the John Woo-isms of 2 to then 3, which is 6 years later, which is a completely different beast and very on that, a very troubled production there. But then to this one, this is, yeah, you're absolutely right. This is lighting that touch paper on what the franchise would eventually become. Christopher McQuarrie, halfway through production of Ghost Protocol, got drafted in to basically rewrite the screenplay as they were going.
So this
was like, right, yeah, this one. It's like, right, okay, the set pieces are done here. This has been filmed already, but we need to make this less convoluted. And part of that was they absolutely scoured the villain role. They brought it right back. And this is why, you know, when a lot of people complain about, if they've got anything to complain about this film, it's about the two-dimensional villain. Well, apparently that wasn't the case before, and it was, like, way too confusing. So, yeah, it's, yeah. I just dig this film, guys. This is why I picked this. This is a nice slice. I'm just happy to be here.
I mean, I think I'm going to focus primarily on the last three Mission Impossibles because they're just the most interesting. But the relationship, and I was going to ask about the relationship with Chris McQuarrie and how that came into place. I didn't know that, and that makes sense when you see this. And famously, it's a series of set pieces, and they kind of put a tenuous line through them all, but they just have the set pieces they want to hit in each bit. Does that mean that, for me, when I was watching this time, I just kind of thought the in-betweeny bits were a bit like, I don't need to pay attention at all. I'm just waiting for the clock to tick down until the next set piece. I mean, what were your thoughts on those? Did you think there needs to be a story, or are you just kind of enthralled by what Ethan and the guys are going to do next on screen?
I'm kind of really in awe at how they do kind of make it feel like an actual film that's been planned and written. I mean, especially the later ones where McQuarrie is so open about being like, yeah, we just have these ideas and then stitch together. Like, that shouldn't be how movies are made, and yet...
That's quite literally how they made the Bond films from like the 60s, 70s into the 80s. Was the same concept. We've got these three tentpole action set pieces, and then, right, what can we pilfer from the Ian Fleming novels that kind of works with this?
Yeah, and so, like, yeah, being able to lay the link up, especially in this one as well, of whatever story's going on, I think is really good. It must be really, really clever. And I think with this one, what you see is... like a raising of the stakes as it goes on. Like, this one is famously the one where, like, the tech lets them down at every opportunity. Everything breaks. They're all on their own. Like, the whole IMF is gone, and it's kind of thinking on your feet when everything is going wrong. And I think it's just down to these storytelling fundamentals of, you know, throwing in wrinkles. You know, it's but then storytelling, not and then. It's not just, you know, stuff happening. It's like every turn they have a plan, something goes wrong, how do they fix it? Like, almost like relentlessly. And it's really great. And I think 3 kind of started that as well. I think 3 for me is very much a firm favorite, because I think that kind of has not necessarily the same amount of stuff going wrong, but the same sense of propulsiveness and progression in things going badly anyway. And I think three for me has easily the most, the highest emotional stakes. Everything is kind of about trying to save Julia, and I think Philip Seymour Hoffman's easily the most enigmatic villain you have, and I think he really brings out incredible performances here. So I think going into Ghost Protocol, I think the whole filmmaking gets like a lot cleaner. This is where the idea of the big stunt really kind of comes in, because you've got like the big train stunt from the first one, but this is before he's kind of doing everything for real. Three really is kind of the big stunt is essentially Tom Cruise sprinting a lot, which is incredible to watch on its own. But outside of that, it's what, like the bridge attack and him getting thrown into a car. So it's all kind of quite small. Whereas here with the Burj Khalifa sequence, it's like you feel like this is the one that set the bar, especially with this coming out in IMAX and doing big business there. And then I'd like to know how much Macquarie had a hand in the Burj Khalifa stuff, whether he knew if I take on this series, I'm going to top myself like every time with a big thing, whether it's hanging on the plane in Rogue Nation or you know, the big helicopter chase in Fallout. Like, this is where it really starts to step up.
We've had recently Tom Cruise in Collateral for an episode. Mm. I think that's our only Tom Cruise film today, isn't it?
Yes.
But for me, this is where he becomes like an interesting actor, is this film. He's always been someone who's just a good... lots and lots of people really love him to bits, but for me, it's just like, you know, Tom Cruise is good looking at her, whatever.
He's
but
the last movie star,
This is where he becomes, like, for me, a super duper A-list star. And I don't think I care about... I've not watched a Jack Reacher film, but every Mission Impossible film while he's in it, I'm going to be 100% running to the cinema to go and see it. I'm super excited about the next one. And I've watched lots of the behind the scenes where he's literally the guy on a motorbike jumping off a cliff in Norway. And he kind of astonishes me as an odd person, but also the person who's really drives a film forward, really drives everything, puts his heart and soul and everything into that, but also is the one who's kind of self-effacing and who will shake the hands of everyone he meets in, you know, on the red carpet, because he's that kind of, there's both sides of him, and it seems to tally. But this Burj Khalifa thing, all reports say he did it, and I'm sure he did it, but also I'm like, I don't see how he did it. This makes no sense. No one lets you hang off the side of the Burj Khalifa. And
lots of wires.
Yeah, there's that famous photo of Cruise sat at the very top of Burj Khalifa, like in bare feet, just smiling away. And even that, like outside of the film and what we see in the sequence, I'm just like, how are you up there just chilling? Like, you're insane. This is mad. Because yeah, this whole sequence, if we're talking about it now, it's one of my favorite kind of stunts of the series, because it is so simple. It is just you've got to climb a building, but the building is the biggest thing in the world, and you've got breaking gloves and this is it. This is what I was saying about the escalation. Like, everything keeps going up, so one glove breaks, and then he's using the glass cutter, and that flies away, and he falls, and then he has to get in, and he has to jump out, and it's just improvising kind of solutions on an insane scale. And then that final swing jump to the window is just heart in mouth.
And I think what helps elevate it for me is Simon Pegg and the levity in there.
Yeah,
because as soon as he breaks through the glass and Simon Pegg walks through the door, it's like, what's going on? Oh no, he comes in and says, oh, that was really difficult, and everyone's like,
whatever he's been doing. I think Sam Pegg's been a real asset to the series, because I think he brings just the right level of comic relief, especially in this one, where he's really promoted up. He's hilarious, like the whole breaking into the Kremlin as well, and him sticking his head up into the camera and things and everything there. He's great.
That's definite Brad Birdisms, that whole sequence with them like dragging the thing across, so the guard is getting the specific perspective of the room, so they don't know that they're behind the sheet. And that's such an odd little concept, but again, there's so much comedy in that, in the sneaky espionage thing in the Kremlin of all places. And then by the time we get to the Burj Khalifa, that's clearly, like, you know, that's the tentpole set piece. And yeah, you're right, it's just not only is everything going wrong, but then the mask making device, and we've had three films before this where everything's all about the masks.
Yeah, you're just like, okay, this, what they're gonna do with the mask.
Yeah, and so it's just like, guess what, guys, you got no masks, deal with it. And yeah, like, what do they do? And poor, you know, obviously Simon Pegg's character Benji, who's been so desperate to get into one of these masks, you know, and yeah, no mask for him in this film.
Fake arm though.
That's pretty cool. Again, seeing this back to back with three, was really interesting because, again, you got the J.J. Abrams of three, which is like grabbing the audience by the wrists and then just racing them through a narrative, you know, regardless.
Because he might not be able to, he's not the best at telling a story.
Pretty much, yes. Yeah. I think it helps that it's incredibly simple in that one. But yeah. I think the thing that sticks with me the most with this franchise is this is definitely this rolling stone that is Tom Cruise gathering pretty much no moss right up until a team starts to properly form in this one. He's had Ving Rhames, you know, in 1, 2, and 3, and then cameos in this one. Luckily, returns for Rogue Nation and Fallout. But, you know, this is the one where, you got the guy who was the guy in the chair from 3 is now a field agent. We've got Simon Pegg in this. Cool, wicked, excellent. And then Jeremy Renner, who was clearly supposed to be a big thing in the franchise that we kind of lose after Rogue Nation. But you can tell there's an attempt now that it's not just the Ethan Hunt show. That there is that it's all about teamwork, guys, and that's the thing I kind of dig about this is the fact that they're not a fully amalgamated team. You know, the Burj Khalifa with all of their best effort totally cocks up, like they actually screw up completely in the worst way possible. And again, having watched 1, 2, and 3 prior to this, this is the first one where you go, like, you get to that point halfway through, you go, oh shit. They've got to claw this back somehow. Now this is a path of redemption because the team now has to suddenly dust themselves down and work together. And it's like, how are we going to stop this nutter from...
And it does really go right down to the wire. Like, this is it. And with the team element, I think you were saying...
Of course, it goes down to the wire.
That's, yeah.
Chris McCoy talks about it every single time. That literally, it has to go.
Definitely, that's one of the reasons why I think it's probably my favourite as well, is that you kind of expect them to achieve all these things, and it does surprise you in, you know, kind of like a mega franchise that's not like a regular occurrence, so it is constantly surprising. And no matter how many times I still, like, is he going to make the jump? I mean, you kind of know, but also, like, it's so tense that your heart, even for me watching it repeated times, is just like, it might not, because, you know, you've seen it before. And we've already said, I think this is just where it really started to be quite fun. And there's nothing worse than watching something and it's just kind of really dry. And it's so much fun and everyone looks like they're having a great time. And yeah, it's just great to see fun things every now and again.
I think that jump you say, because each time I see it, in my mind, it's like, oh yeah, he runs out of hose pipe, but it's fine. He swings himself around, lands in. But it's not. It's like he hits the frame.
Dong.
And then
they have to
scramble to grab him and pull him up there. Each time I almost forget that. And that's something good about the storytelling. That he's like very, very nearly good for now. And
I think that's a testament to doing something for real as well. I think, you know, you see that exact same moment play out in a more obvious green screen or wirework thing and you're in it, but you're not like in it. And I think that's it, because I think doing things for real on this scale is what just tricks people. You know, we know we're watching a movie, but when we can feel the wind and the drop to the ground, it's just like
and having like a fallible protagonist, but having a protagonist that takes knocks as well. It's like John McClane in the first Die Hard, as opposed to the last Die Hard.
Yeah.
You know,
as opposed to Ethan Hunt in Mission Impossible
this
2.
This is exactly it, yeah. So, like, basically, Mission Impossible 2 is that same character where somebody's put the cheat codes on, as everything's all Hans Zimmer, widdly, widdly, wanky guitar sounds.
He's doing somersault kicks, super riding cool. bikes.
He's riding bikes, like, just, it's just an
jousting
all the
bikes.
Way around.
Rock climbing.
Yeah. Rock climbing, Doug Ray Scott in a denim suit. Yeah, that's a film and a half.
You should have killed me, Hunt.
I just, like, last time I was lucky enough to come on to this podcast, I picked Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. And again, I adore that. It's one of my favourite films.
I was going to say, would you prefer Thomas Alfredson or Brian De Palma?
You know what? Brian De Palma. You know, I'll keep Brian De Palma with his, but you know what? When we get to nine, I'd get that guy out of filmmaker jail. Yes, he made The Snowman.
Ooh.
No, I'm not going to blame him entirely. There was clearly lots going on with that.
There's lots of bullshit going on with that.
Nonsense. But yeah, that guy has not directed like a feature film since. It's like, guys, come on, get him back in the game. And I think, you know what? Once Macquarie's got his fourth Mission Impossible out the way
That's half the series by then.
Strip it back. You know, make Tom Cruise the man in the chair. You know, he's the man in charge. You know, get some more of the espionage thing in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, you bring
back some other people.
You keep adding more on. There's obviously Jeremy Renner was clearly kind of sort of set up to potentially be the replacement, which was never, ever, ever going to happen. I mean, stop trying to make
same thing
happen.
Same thing happened with Bourne, didn't it?
Yeah, that was.
Bourne Legacy, yeah.
But
Jeremy Renner vehicle.
You kind of wonder, like, how long is Cruise going to carry on? Because he kind of looks about 25 in this. So
he does.
Is he going to be, like, 80 and still doing these films? I kind of think he might be a bit of, like, you know, Jackie Chan going on there.
Unless they kill him first. I mean, as in the films.
That'd be his decision, wouldn't
it?
Anyway, so
that really was an impossible mission. Yeah, because he'll be 60 by the time that last one comes out. Yeah, I think he'll just go on and on, right? But yeah, I hope they mix it up.
Just have a cold open where he's running and then his knee just explodes and he's like, "Right, I'm out."
Oof, that's dark.
But yeah, I really like the team in this as well, because I was saying, like, I still really like the team in 3 of Maggie Q and John Rhys-Meyers.
It's not John Rhys-Davies.
But they are very much just ancillary characters who are just good at their job and doing their job, whereas the guys here have a bit more invested in what's going on, whereas everyone in 3 is just helping Ethan save his wife. But I like the team dynamic in 3 a bit more. I think maybe just because I really love the Vatican extraction sequence, whereas actually the sort of equivalent here, the India party, is also really cool, especially with that guy, what's his name?
Amir Kapoor?
Yes, who's just having a great time.
He's so good.
Flirting up a storm with Paula Patton.
Fair play.
We haven't had Paula Patton since this one, have we?
No.
She disappears.
Yep, same way that Maggie Q disappeared from 3.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
and Helicopter Man from 2.
Helicopter Man from 2.
If anyone cares.
Yeah, whatever that Australian actor's name was.
We're forgetting the first early casualty from the Mission Impossible, Emilio Estevez, in 1.
Yeah.
That was
the first person you see on screen in that film is Emilio Estevez. And then he's gone within the first 25 minutes, and you're like, "What? Hang on. This was the team, though. Like, what? I can't imagine how that would have blown people away 25 years ago."
Watching this one, a similar kind of thing is that Josh Holloway's in it, and I remember watching it and thinking, "Oh yeah, this is going to be good. Quite fancy seeing him in a bit of this." And then obviously, we don't, even though he would have kind of been relatively biggish around that time, coming off the back of Lost.
Well, yeah, I think Josh Holloway, yeah, he never got the leading man status I think he's very much deserves. I love him in Lost, and as soon as he shows up in this, it feels like he's...
that's Josh Holloway, yeah.
Sawyer, yeah. As soon as he shows up here, you think, yeah, I can actually, like, if he was the Renner part, like, I'd love to see him carry on.
Work.
But, shot down very early on here.
We were saying, actually, like, watching 3 and 4 back-to-back and just going, right, well, if Maggie Q had carried over and it wasn't Paula Patton, and you could have had the Jonathan Rhys-Meyers character being the Josh Holloway character, so him getting killed off would have given the Maggie Q character but again, Jonathan Rhys-Meyers was making Tudors, and Maggie Q was absolutely slam dunking it with Nikita, however many seasons of that she made, so neither could return. And we were looking,
were they asked to?
Yes, I believe that was the case. But then the same thing happened with, I think Paula Patton was, she just had a baby around the time of this film, in fact, Ghost Protocol. And so she wasn't acting for a couple of years around that, which is, I think, why we didn't later then see her in Rogue Nation, which is a terrible shame.
Yeah, I quite like the way that they do refresh the team in these, though, because, like, you know, there's at least for the around this era, there is a good number of years between movies. So you can just imagine the IMF carries on. You know, not everyone stays in their job for many years anyway, and it's a dangerous line of work. So it makes sense that it could be all different. But yeah, Darren's right. It's a shame that there are certain relationships here that could have been tied to three a bit more. Because we were also saying, like, Tom Wilkinson showing up as the boss here. Like, if that had been Lawrence Fishburne from three, and then he gets shot in the head straight away, you'd be like, oh my god, you know, all the old people are getting knocked off. But then maybe that would become a bit too predictable, I guess. You'd be like, oh, whoever's left over from the last one is,
which is kind of
gonna die.
What ended up, yeah, spoiler, I'm not gonna, yeah.
So now they're pulling back, now there's some consistency, because it was uneven and irregular gaps between the first three. But now I think once they hit Ghost Protocol, they thought, actually, let's do this properly,
let's turn this into a franchise,
and
Cruise, you know.
Cruise had stopped, like, faffing around with the other types of film, and just thought, let's just do the big blockbusters, because that's what gets me notoriety. And then they can double down, so they can bring back Rebecca Ferguson, they can bring back Ving Rhames, and have a consistency there, because, and I think that's what will help drive people forward. And it's the same kind of thing you have with the Fast and Furious, to lean on that again. Now you have a consistent team that comes back, whereas the first few was a different setup, apart from Toretto and
Paul Walker.
Should we head to the scores?
Let's do it.
Hello, folks. I'm Sam.
And I'm Martin.
And every week for the last 5 years, we've got together to talk about the musician Tom Waits.
He's a gravelly voice singer that sounded like he doused his vocal cords in bourbon and set fire to them with a cigarette, and wrote such classic songs as Way Down in the Hole, Downtown Train, Jersey Girl.
He's also the gravelly-voiced actor from films such as The Ballad of Buster Scruggs and Seven Psychopaths, both of which coincidentally are on Netflix, and both of which Kobe and Helen have discussed here on FlixWatcher.
So make sure you check those episodes out, and when you have a little bit of a taste for the magic that is Tom Waits, why not head over to songbysongpodcast.com or search for Song by Song in your podcatcher of choice to listen to a little bit more about Tom Waits.
Welcome to our Flix Watcher scores. All of our scores are out of five. You may have decimal places if you wish. And we'll start with you, please, Daryl, with the recommendability.
I'm going to give this a five. I straight up adore this. It's one of those things, as the older I've gotten and watching these films quite often, these are a good, these are great for that. But this is one of those ones that I recommend these over even the Daniel Craig Bonds. I really do. I dig it, man. Like, yes, well, I love Casino Royale, but like,
let's do the spy franchises.
Go for
the F word. Where do the Mission Impossible films rank for you? And also, to be honest, Fast and Furious, are they almost spy films?
They're definitely headed that way. I think the older I've gotten, and the more I've kind of waned from Bond. I'm going to probably be the odd one out here, but I really wasn't overly enamored by the Bourne franchise. I really liked the first one, but then the Greengrass, man, that Juddery Cameron nonsense, it kind of doomed action films for about 7 or 8 years after that, and I hate it. Look, I will take your Tinker Tailors, I will take your Fast and Furiouses and your Missions Impossibilises. just any of that. But yeah, I just, these are the ones I come back to now.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, I think at this point, this is probably my favourite spy franchise, because it is consistent in a way that none others really are.
Which is a weird thing to say, because it's the Mission Impossible franchise.
Yeah, it's like there's a continuity to it, but up until maybe the very recent ones, you don't need to know anything. It is kind of standalone adventures, especially with the team being refreshed as often as it does, with just a few continuing threads. So I think it's very accessible.
Well, they're like a bag of all sorts as well, that. Like, if you want your Cold War Brian De Palma thriller, you've got one there. Mm-hmm. If you want some John Woo nonsense, you know, you've got two. If you want something that's fast paced but emotionally driven, you've got three.
Well, it's like the Alien franchise to begin with, everyone coming from a different auteur director. And then the fact that the guy who has essentially taken over it now is delivering the big bucks anyway, the big thrills, is like no mean thing. Like, if someone who was doing my least favorite was the one with the keys to the franchise now, that would be something else. But you know, for my money, outside Abrams. Of number two, yeah, outside of two, like all of these are kind of four star and up pretty much. So I think that's great.
So I was saying to this.
What about yourself,
Helen? Oh, well, I can't stand James Bond, so that's that franchise out the window.
Not even Casino Royale?
Not really.
Not even
Skyfall's really boring. No, I mean, Mission Impossible, I was quite late to the party on it, on this one. I think it was probably maybe three, whereas I quite enjoy this, and then I've since kind of gone back. But there's just something about this, and I think it's mainly to do with Tom Cruise and just kind of everything just kind of gets thrown in, but you're just kind of in it, and you just kind of forget that it's completely ridiculous, and you just, you know, everything exists in this world that they've created, and because they've created it so well that you don't mind, like, you're just like, well, of course you couldn't, like, drive a car straight headfirst and survive. You're like, of course you can, because they've created that. And yeah, I'm really excited to see what it's going to bring. And I think it's just, you have so much fun with them. And I think there's so many films that just are so serious and just a bit like, taking themselves too serious. And then, yeah, I just really like this. So, but I did quite like the Bourne films, but again, they took it in a direction. It's like, I don't really want that. Whereas this has kind of gone from strength to strength.
So what about Fast and Furious?
I'm not really into that. I mean, we had one of them, and I've seen the first one. Yeah.
So this one toes the line for you then. This is it's not the seriousness. It toes the line between seriousness and silliness.
I don't know. I don't know whether it's got like the star draw for me, whereas Mission Impossible has got Cruise, and you know, he's kind of got a bit weirder and a little bit like crazier with age. So I'm just like, what's he going to do next? He just runs better than anyone else.
I think, probably I'll put Fast and Furious in there to as a bit of a cheat, because I think for me, it's the Fast and Furious and Mission Impossible. I'm not that enamored by Bond. I like Casino Royale. I think Skyfall's fantastic. I used to watch them all as a kid. I couldn't tell you the difference between each one of them, and it mystifies me when people do For Your Eyes Only, you only twice Goldfinger. I mean, I don't know which one Goldfinger is, but people have a definite favourite, and I'm just like, I mean, I'll watch them kind of sometimes, but for me it's not that interesting. But yeah, I think Mission Impossible and Fast and Furious as a espionage, the most inconspicuous spies in the entire world. tie a safe to the back of a car and run it through Rio de Janeiro. Why not? I think it's just good. They're just fun, aren't they? They're just fun. Both those franchises. Fast and Furious is a bit too ridiculous, but they're just both fun.
I could see the Ethan Hunt from Mission Impossible 2 in the Fast and Furious world, for sure.
Faster than I can see Vin Diesel in Fallout or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Recommendability score, Matt?
Really high. I'll go for like a 4.7. I think, you know, unless you're just completely against a good time, or action films, or stories where or stories where things go increasingly wrong for people. I know that stresses some people out. It's weird. What do you want in a movie? Everything to go right? No.
They just want a screensaver for 2 hours.
Yeah. Like, no peril. I think that is like a rising thing I see across film Twitter. People being like, oh, why has to be all this antagonism? Can't people just get along? It's like, that's not a movie. I mean, if you're into this stuff, you've most probably already seen this one. So I think it's, very high, and definitely a high point of the franchise for sure.
Helen?
I'm going to give this a 5. I just think it's great fun, and it's probably the one that I've seen the most. But I think, you know, just book a day out your weekend and maybe just like watch them all or something. But yeah, it's just, I've already said it, it's really fun. I like it. I found the bit about the blue being glue and red being dead like the funniest thing ever, and I still think it's hilarious. And yeah, it's just great.
It's the speed at which Simon Pegg just goes dead. Yeah,
just brilliant. And you know, it's every time I watch it, I'm like, Simon Pegg's done well, hasn't he? Bless him, he's done well.
Hanging out with Cruise all the time. Yeah. Oh.
There is that bit of pride, isn't there? That you're like, oh, I used to watch Space. I used to watch not the Fast Show.
Big Train.
Mm. Yeah. And, you know, I loved him from Big Train. So it's great seeing someone he loved in this quirky comedy, both sets of quirky comedies, like mucking it with and stealing scenes from Tom Cruise. And my favourite is the, I mentioned it in passing before, but him and Jeremy Renner. Yeah, so I jump, yeah, and I'll catch you. And that interplay there is brilliant. Yeah. What don't you get? I'll catch you. It's fine. So yeah, I'm going to 4.5. Repeat viewing score. Darryl.
I mean, this is the second time I've watched this in the last, I think, 6 weeks. so yeah, no, this is crazy high for me. This gets a 5. I'm going all out for this one. I could watch this again tomorrow. Like I no doubt that before the next week starts, I think we're probably going to have done. Nodding along. We're 100% going to do Rogue Nation and Fallout.
Got to complete the mission, Dan.
And then, well, the next one comes out what, like middle of next year. 100%, I'll be watching all 6 of those in the lead up. So within the space of 18 months, I'll have seen this film 3 times. Easy, you know what? And now I might even watch it with the director's commentary as well, just for shits and giggles. Seriously, gonna do it,
Matt.
Rewatchability. Yeah, really high again. I'll say like a 4.8. I think this one really flows. Like it's got, you know, when you kind of base a film around kind of set pieces and moments, it gives you a chance, I guess, to kind of really have a good pace and structure the stuff. When you know we can start big, you've got like the big prison escape, and then you have, like Burj Khalifa, into like Sandstorm Chase, into Indian Party Ball Heist, into high-tech car park finale. Like, so there's not many chances for it to kind of lose you, which is really cool, and I think that's what these films all do so well. So they're definitely ones you can watch again and again, and even just, you know, the ones that if you catch on TV, I think if you catch on TV during one of the big moments, you'll probably just go through the rest, so and see it through. So yeah, high score there.
I wish I had that repeat viewing level that you guys have. It's a shame. This is the only one that's on Netflix at the moment, isn't it? I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The others were, like I say, 3 months ago, they were on Now TV / Sky.
I think it's a shame that they aren't all on Netflix for me personally, because, you know, bank holiday weekend coming up. I've seen it a few times. I will watch it again. But also, I'm kind of like, I do want to watch the other ones again now, having not seen them in a fair time. So I'm going to go a strong 4 for repeat viewing.
Just get a free trial on Now TV. And like you say, it's bank holiday weekend. Just smash through it then, and then a cancel straight afterwards. Bank holiday Monday.
Mission Impossible.
Cancel it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's your Mission Impossible if you choose to accept it. Slamming the unsubscribe button from Now TV just in time. Cancel free trial.
What was yours? 4, was it, Helen? Yeah, I'll go for 4. I think this is probably the most rewatchable one for me, even Fallout and the other one a bit less so. I think this just has the right charm, but I kind of miss Ving Rhames. I think each of them's got the charm. Like Henry Cavill in the last one's hilarious as a piece, but this has, from what I remember, it has the most of the bits in it for me. Small screen score. Interesting. Darryl.
I find this could be a bit of a cop-out, because, like, this is one I would not watch on my smartphone, for sure. I mean, I wouldn't, like, you know, like, seriously, I wouldn't. It's not really something I tend to do anyway. But, like, I got, you know, got myself a nice TV, because the start of Lockdown 1, literally one day into Lockdown 1, my old TV died. Jeanette and I walk around the house going, why can I smell burning, but nothing's on fire? And then the next day we went to turn on the telly, and nothing, like no bueno. So yeah, just ordered a new telly from Argos, thinking, yeah, I'll go and collect it from the Argos in town. Wrong Argos. Had to go all the way into like Barnet on foot. 2 days into a lockdown, it's like Escape from New York, only it was North Finchley. And yeah, so nice telly, nice speakers, and we had this onto a nice earth shaking level today. So like, in terms of small screen experience, and I know 30 minutes was shot on an IMAX, I'm all over this. I'm totally cool with it. I'm not sat in a cinema with somebody's cheesy feet and balls and mobile phone in my face, so and I'm on my own sofa
with my balls in your face.
So yeah, I'd go 4 for this, you know. Because I think there's still room for cinemas, obviously.
Matt?
I think this is maybe more than most of them, the one that's kind of made for IMAX, thanks to Burj Khalifa. So, you know, I've got to give it props for the big screen. Because when I saw Fallout, that was at the IMAX. I did see that for the first time.
It's literally the day I met you.
It was. I'd just come out of Mission Impossible. There you go. And it was nuts because that Fallout screening, it unfortunately, was also in 3D, which I thought we were way beyond. So I had like...
We're better than this.
Yeah, IMAX 3D for Fallout just sort of blew my face off. The helicopter chase was crazy. But yeah, so this is obviously suited for big screen if you can. But yeah, get a good setup going and it's a lot of fun. And I think once you're in, you know, repeat viewings with beer and pizza and your mates and stuff, it's the perfect kind of Saturday night film, really. So yeah, I'll give it a 4.3.
Helen?
I'm going to go a bit lower. I'm going to give it 3.5. I absolutely loved seeing this at the cinema, right? Really, really, really enjoyed the collective experience and the collective gasp and the collective laughs. And like, out of kind of like... the bigger films, this will get me to the cinema and I'll make a special effort. I missed the last one and I was really annoyed with myself that I missed seeing it at the cinema and I'm not going to make the same escape game. But it's fine watching it on the TV, I guess, for like your repeat views. But watching it, I was just like, I really, really, really did enjoy watching it at the cinema for this one. And I want to get that feeling back.
I think I'd quite like to do a Prince Charles marathon.
Yes.
I'm not sure where I'll probably jump in at 3. I think that'd be quite fun. But otherwise, I think, to be honest, even though it is a shot for as big a screen as possible, I think it works great for me at home. So I'm going to go for it. Yeah.
So you've got a better TV than me.
It's not particularly fancy. It's just, I think it works great for me at home. I think the soundscape and I think as much as the big set pieces, it's the character beats, even like the escape from the prison at the start, the funny bits, but Ethan's like trying to open this door and winding up between him and Simon Pegg. Those are the bits that kind of really drive me through. So you don't need a big screen for that. But I think watching with a bunch of people like Prince Charles would be quite fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go for 5. Fuck it. engagement score. Daryl.
Right. So I'm going to give it a 5. fuck it. That's straight up. If this was on a regular telly, and I just caught even the first 10 minutes of this, what doesn't matter what I was doing. That's it. I'm gonna be watching this. This is one of those like chicken soup of a films, you know, that just if I'm feeling a bit rubbish, it'll go on and I'll be glued to it. You know, it's one that of all of them, you know, of the 6 that are there. This is one I'll go back to in the same way that there's a whole bunch of like, you know, MCU films or whatever there. If I just need to just put my brain in something for 2 hours, then it's great for that. And yeah, I'm never once, you know, looking at my phone or my watch during this. There's always something in there. And I think, it's a bit of a hangover from the Abrams one prior to this. Is this that kind of, again, grab you by the cuffs and pull you through to the finish line. I think that's what the later films then benefit from as well. But this one, this is the Mac Daddy for me.
Matt,
I'll go high. I'm going to go about 4.7 here. I think 3 is still my personal favorite. So I think if this was my favorite of the series, I'd just go full 5. Okay. Yeah, 3, especially having not seen it in a while and having now seen it about 3 hours ago. Like what that does, what it sets out to do from the very start and pulls you through, I think is just incredible. And it almost feels low key compared to some of the later ones. Like it is the personal story and, you know, the lack of kind of big kind of real set piece thing. I think it's all the little bits that come through are so strong and so motivated by everything going on and the characters there. I really love it. So yeah, I mean, still incredibly high. I think this is one of the best of the series and anyone who's into it will love it. So yeah, 4.8. 4.8.
You know, I was thinking like, oh, is it like a 4.7 or like a 4.8? I'm like, you know what? Fuck it, it's a 5. Right? It is. It's so entertaining, and like even through like the kind of like the talky bits, the bits where there's no action, you know, you still kind of want to know what's going on because it's like, well, it's Mission Impossible, so you know, there's going to be some things happening that are going to switch and you're going to have to pay attention or you're not going to know what's going on in the next 5 minutes. So yeah, a 5.
I'm going to go for a 4 because I think I'd kind of just zone out in between when it's talky bits, I kind of zone out. It's incidental. And when it's the set pieces, I, you know, re-engage again. So it's like I go to Twitter, titter around there, and then wait for him to hang off the side of the Burj Khalifa. And then I wait for him to jump into a BMW and throw himself off the side of some random garage, which I still don't understand the physics and logistics of. But
completely forgot about that bit. I was like, what?
He's dead.
What?
Yeah, so 4. I'm going to go 4. And that gives us an overall score of 4.53750, which is super high. Super high.
Cool.
It's pretty good.
So we head to Twitter, guys. Do you follow everyone on Twitter? Everyone is listening. We are at FlixWatcherPod. And follow us because we do put out a little tweet with a little GIF saying things like this. We're reviewing Ghost Protocol with Sun Double Deep and at Matt Brothers 2 from Is Paul Dano OK?, which is their podcast. And ask for a little review and the score out of 5 stars. We had one today from some chancer called Liam H. Dempsey. Liam H. Yeah. Dempsey.
What does he
say? I know, right?
Who's that
and,
guy?
Liam Darryl H. Dempsey. Says Burj Khalifa is the best Mission Impossible set piece and all the action is incredibly impressive, but the dialogue scenes between the action really drag for me in this. Maybe it was the misguided attempt to set Renner up as someone who could take over the franchise. Never gonna happen. 3.5 stars.
Ooh, lower than we've shown here, but hey, you know,
it's one of those things where I just like to kind of like I'm gonna have to ask Liam now what his franchise order is, because I like, you could tell me that, you know, 2's your favorite and your order is what, and I'll just be like, yeah, it doesn't matter. I really dig them all for completely different reasons, whether it's because they're attempting to be like, you know, it's a Brian De Palma like Cold War espionage film with the first one, or it's like a, again, it's you know, like running on a motorbike with electric guitar in your hands and your Oakleys on, wheedly wheedly wow of 2,
and your mullet
or like or whatever it is. There's something in these that you know is for everyone.
Guys, can you let us work and find you online, and we'll say goodbye to everyone who's listening.
Yeah, so you can find Is Paul Dano OK? on Twitter and Instagram at Is Paul Dano OK? We will have season 2 this July, another run of 8 episodes and 2 bonuses that will take us through to sort of the end of August. So that's all coming up. We're all very excited.
Excellent. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure once again.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K, Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.